This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. Today we celebrate the 75th anniversary of the birth of Reverend Martin Luther King, Jr. Around the country, church services, parades, and memorial ceremonies commemorate Dr. King's life and legacy. And tonight on PBS television stations, a new documentary, Citizen King, explores the last 5 years of Dr. King's life, the years after the I Have a Dream speech, and for the most part after the passage of the Civil Rights Act. These are the years when Dr. King focused on issues broader than the civil rights struggle, issues such as poverty and the war in Vietnam. We'll be talking about this film for the rest of the hour, and we invite your calls. What do you remember about Martin Luther King from those years? Give us a call, 800-989-8255. That's 800-989-TALK. Or you can send us email, totn@npr.org. Orlando Bagwell directed and produced the film along with Nolan Walker. Mr. Bagwell joins us now from the studios of member station KPCW in Park City, Utah. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you, Neil.
Your film includes words of Martin Luther King accepting the Nobel Peace Prize in 1964 in Oslo. And why don't we begin there?
I accept this award today with an abiding faith in America, an audacious faith in the future of mankind. I have the audacity to believe that peoples everywhere can have 3 meals a day for their bodies, education and culture for their minds, and dignity, equality, and freedom for their spirits.
And Orlando Bagwell, in there, are we hearing some of the themes that will dominate Dr. King's life for the next few years?
Yes, I think in that Nobel Peace Prize speech, you begin to hear the outline that Dr. King's going to use for his work in the very near future. That Nobel Peace Prize speech is actually one of his great speeches, one that we don't hear very much about, but one where he really begins to outline that his attempts to address the issues of the poor and the issues of violence in America, as well as our responsibilities as citizens to speak out about those things that are the issues of the state at the time.
It's interesting. Most of the documentaries and then the biographies of Martin Luther King sort of lead up to the I Have a Dream speech and the passage of the Civil Rights Act. You've decided to concentrate on the period after that. Why?
Well, we felt that in some way on the holiday, Dr. King kind of gets frozen in time, that we see him on the steps of the Lincoln Memorial and we hear the I Have a Dream speech and we forget that a lot of his years afterwards was when his voice really became a voice that was really his, a voice that reflected his conscience. And we wanted that voice to be front and center. We thought that it was a voice that is much more challenging and one that we wanted to make available so that families, classrooms, students, others could sit down and discuss and debate the ways in which that voice speaks to them and whether they agree or disagree with it. We thought it would be a useful voice to hear today, especially today.
As I'm sure you're aware, several African-American thinkers have said that America honors on this day an antiseptic hero in Martin Luther King. The writer Michael Eric Dyson even proposed a moratorium on listening to or reading the I Have a Dream speech. So what do you think we have to gain by realizing that our heroes are more complicated than we make them out to be?
Well, I think sometimes when we there's a great line in the film from Joseph Lowery where he talks about how it's easier for us to build monuments for our heroes than to continue movements that reflect them, and I think that thinking about Dr. King, it's valuable to kind of to explore the complexity of his life, but also of his message, and to engage in a kind of discussion of that. Because I think for Dr. King, at the center of citizenship in his mind is this idea that we should be in an open dialogue around the issues of the nation, and that this is something we should not be afraid of, but we should be actively involved in. And when we're involved in those things as citizens, our democracy is actually at its best.
Yet he faced a lot of difficulties when his movement expanded from the crystal clear focus on civil rights and expanded.
Yes, once Dr. King had moved beyond the issues of segregation and started talking about things like poverty, things about like open housing and employment, when he began to come out against the war in Vietnam and kind of focus that protests around the whole notion of violence and the devastation of war in a modern day society, how it not only devastates those who are the recipients of the violence of the moment, but also how it begins to violate our environment and then impact generations to come. I think that these are things that people had a little bit harder time getting comfortable with and aligning themselves with, and thus Dr. King started facing a lot of not only resentment but also a lot of disapproval in terms of where he was taking what they considered the civil rights movement and moving it into a discussion of war and peace, but also the civil rights movement and taking it into a discussion of class in America.
We're speaking with Orlando Bagwell about his new film, Citizen King, which airs tonight on public television stations around the country. If you'd like to join the conversation, it's 800-989-8255, 800-989-TALK, or email us totn@npr.org. And Lisa joins us on the line from Phoenix, Arizona.
Neil, thank you. I admire your work.
Oh, thank you.
This brings back a very vivid memory. I was a little girl in Tucson, Arizona, which has maybe a 3% black population to this day. And my dad worked at a TV station and came home from work early the day Dr. King was assassinated. There was still teletype back then, and he had been reading The Wire when it crossed. And he came home early, which surprised us, and he told us, and he wept. And I had never seen my father cry. I didn't know who Martin Luther King was then, but it created a tremendous awe that this man must have clearly been something very special. And also, I think my initial awareness of the civil rights movement at all, it was huge.
You were obviously too young to have any clear memory of the man himself.
Yes, I have only come to know him through all the tapes and everything that we see, unfortunately.
Hmm. Well, thank you, Lisa. We appreciate it.
Thank you.
Orlando Bagwell, as you were going through this film, it was interesting, one of the curious relationships that develops. Of course, when Martin Luther King made his speech, we were talking about the Kennedy administration, and then it went on to be the Johnson administration, which it did indeed enact the Civil Rights Act of 1964 as part of John F. Kennedy's legacy. And part of the relationship that he had with the then president, Lyndon B. Johnson, your film includes an interview with former Assistant Attorney General Roger Wilkins that describes that relationship.
Johnson wanted to befriend the movement, but King was difficult for him. Martin was not an inside Washington guy. You know, Johnson loved to deal with people. Jump, jump, jump. He was a checkers player. He'd move these people around. He couldn't move Martin around that way.
And that is interesting in a couple of different respects. Do you think that Martin Luther King had an opportunity to become a player, if you will, or one of those people who got moved around, if you look at it the other way, with President Lyndon Johnson?
Well, I think what Johnson recognized in Dr. King was that Dr. King was a man who was driven by his own convictions and his conscience. And that's a very different kind of animal in the whole Washington world, I think. He wasn't a political person. I mean, not that he didn't understand politics, but that wasn't what drove him to do the things that he did. And he was Johnson was much was really used to even other types of black leaders. Roy Wilkins was much more savvy in the political world. Whitney Young, Dr. King, that was not his world. His world was really a world of the people. His world was a world of within the churches of the black community. So this was Dr. King was a different kind of person for Lyndon Johnson, but it was clear that Lyndon Johnson really appreciated the vision of Dr. King and the ideas of Dr. King up until the time he took a very strong stand against the Vietnam War.
And there's, of course, another conflict involved in Dr. King. At the same time, the president might have wanted to talk to him, but the director of the FBI was tapping his phones and accusing him of infidelities and also accusing him of communism. How did Dr. King handle all of that?
Well, this is another thing that we wanted to bring to the public, that Dr. King, oftentimes we see him before the public speaking, and he appears to be so under control, and his voice seems so forceful and clear, but behind this man was so much turmoil, and part of it had to do with the ongoing investigation of J. Edgar Hoover and the allegations that in fact King was being influenced by communists, the allegations that in fact he was lying, that he was a liar, and in some way was not honest with the American people, and on the other front, the information that the FBI was gathering around his private life and their threats that they were going going to make this public through people that they knew within the news media. So Dr. King was living with these things. He knew about these things. Yet at the same time, he had to continue on with the work that he was doing because so many people depended on him to do that.
Here's a clip of tape from the documentary of Martin Luther King Jr. Defending himself and the civil rights movement against accusations of communist sympathies.
I would hope that the FBI would come out and say something that I think is much more significant, and that is that it is amazing that so few Negroes have turned to communism in the light of that desperate plight. I think it is one of the amazing developments of the 20th century, how loyal the Negro has remained to America in spite of his long night of oppression and discrimination.
An excerpt from Orlando Bagwell's new film, Citizen King. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. And Orlando, as you made up this movie, the film is composed largely of personal recollections, and not all of them are flattering. Did you find it difficult to get people to speak honestly about, you know, this icon?
Not really. I think that one of the things, we kept hearing from the interviews that we did, and one thing that we were clear about from the very beginning is that we didn't want this film told from the voice of a narrator, from a detached voice who is trying to interpret Dr. King for you, but we wanted you to learn and to meet Dr. King through the voices of people who had some relationship with him, whether that relationship had to do with a person who was close to him in the movement, someone who might have met him and decided because of the meeting they would march with him, someone who might have covered him as a journalist or even investigated him. But all the people, I think, felt that, you know, it was time to kind of take that. It doesn't serve much purpose if we place our heroes or our leaders or people that we recognize or celebrate up on a pedestal. That in fact, it serves a better purpose if in fact we see them as real human beings with their own struggles, their own failures, their own demons in a sense. And so people wanted to talk to us about those things, about the things that are troubling Dr. King, so that you understand that he's carrying all of that. This is all a part of the person that you're meeting, and therefore, in some way, it gives a greater dimension to some of the things that he's doing. When you see him walking down that Chicago street and confronting that danger, it's not just the danger, but he's carrying a lot on his shoulders, and I think as you get deeper and deeper in the film, you realize the weight on his shoulder becomes heavier and heavier, yet he still continues to step out and walk at the front of the line, speak to the people, and continue to forge forward with what he believes he should be doing.
In fact, I've seen you quoted as saying that, of course, Dr. King, a young man when he was killed, that his autopsy revealed that he had the heart of a 60-year-old.
Exactly. I think that the real pull of the movement from so many directions on Dr. King at this stage of his life was enormous. That you know, that he's being asked to speak everywhere. That in fact his organization, because of the stand that he's taking on Vietnam and his coming out to try and rally people to support efforts to respond to the needs of poor people, his organization was not getting very much. The donations were not coming in. So Dr. King was the one responsible to go out and raise the money through his speaking. You know, at the same time, his children are getting older. His sons are older, his daughters are older, and he's got a pull on his family. You know, we all know if you've had children, once they start reaching a certain age, they need more time with their mother and their father. And Dr. King is feeling all these things, and these are the things that he's carrying with him as he goes out every day, as he's responding to all the pressures and all the needs that are coming from the many different people, the movement that is ever expanding as he begins to open it up to larger issues, but also because the movement itself is changing and becoming much more radical, and therefore his voice, he feels, is a central voice to try and keep it and hold it together.
Let's see if we get one more caller in. Kathy is with us from Georgetown, Colorado. We just have a few seconds, Kathy.
Thank you for taking my call, Neil. I grew up in Memphis, 18. I marched with the sanitation workers. Dr. King was in Memphis because he was organizing, AFSCME was organizing a union of the sanitation workers, and Dr. King was there supporting them. I'm 55 now, and there probably hasn't been a day in my life where I haven't been impacted by that experience of being involved in the sanitation worker strike and the horror of the assassination. And there's just not a day in my life I haven't been impacted by it. And the people that I met, the National Guard that run the buildings in the city is working on the buses when people came in from all over the country to the march that Memphis had, and living in a town that had to live with that scar. But Dr. King was in Memphis because he was supporting workers that were organizing a union, and that's where he was killed.
Kathy, thank you.
Thank you for taking my call.
Appreciate the call very much.
Thank you, Kathy.
Orlando Bagwell, I'm afraid we're going to have to leave it there, but people who are interested in more in that period in Martin Luther King's life can watch PBS stations tonight for the debut of the new film Citizen King. Congratulations.
Thank you very much.
Filmmaker Orlando Bagwell joined us from station KPCW in Park City, Utah. In Washington, I'm Neil Conan, NPR News.